You know, Solomon, when he writes here, he has many questions and many questions about his wisdom. Will his wisdom solve man's problem? Will it be the instrument, okay, to give man worth as he works, as he lives, and his actions on in life here? And that's the big question, you go. Or is it all just vanity? Is it all worthless? Is it a bankrupt that your life here? And that's the things that he stresses in this book of Ecclesiastes as a major point. And it makes us, certainly, the value of the book is that we can reflect on our lives. Do we do things that are useless, I guess you'd say, okay? And also that don't have a purpose with them. Because when you kill time, you don't get it back. And so we've committed to our Lord Christ. So let's use our time as effectively as we can. What's the big question? What's the big question with in the first couple of verses, a few verses of Ecclesiastes? What is the big question? Right. What advantage, what profit, okay? And all the works that you do in your short life here. What advantage is there? Okay, and he goes through those things and kind of compares nature to start with. So we're in the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, and we're finishing up the first 11 verses. And he begins by talking, I'll review a little bit here. He begins by talking about the rivers, rainfalls, and the rivers fill up and they flow to the sea. And guess what? It starts over again. Okay? Really, there's nothing new under the sun. And is that all there is to life? You are born, you live, then you die. And those are certainly reflective points for each of us to think about, okay? When you're young like this guy here, all right, you may not, you know, didn't have an impression. But certainly there's value in taking care of those who are older and much older, okay, and seeing those life changes and life perspectives change, hopefully for the best. But you can see that Solomon, through his wisdom, he wanted to solve the issue. But he really gets himself into a corner, okay, in trying to justify wisdom can solve all things. And he reflects on that in people's lives every day. So, again, any comment along the way, please make it. And I mentioned a minute ago about in the first chapter, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. And again, when he says under the sun, under heaven, those sort of things, it's just life here. Bookended, life here. He's not really reflective on the life after death, although it comes into effect here and there, especially at the end of the 12th chapter. But those things we need to reflect here while we have the short time here. Again, we can think about our eternity. And God's given us the ability to think about things that are infinitive. If you're in math classes, you'll know about the infinity symbol and that sort of thing. All right? But those things to think about. So, Solomon, it begins in that first chapter, 5 through 9, there's nothing new under the sun. And that's the perspective he starts with. Again, trying to answer the question. And he ends up stating after, verse 6 and that sort of thing, it all ends where it started. Okay, it's no profit, no benefit. Real change doesn't happen. he thinks in life that his wisdom, you know, could give the answer for everything. And people just don't respond to wisdom, do they? Okay? They don't respond to doing the right thing, thinking about an eternity. And those are things that he's going to stress as we go into this. And in verse 8, he talks about all things are wearisome. And for him, he's trying to solve the issue, answer the question. But as he looks more and more into it, the meaning of life under the sun, he's unable to tell and see and hear those things that people need to know, even for himself. So that's the points that he's making there. And of course, he says, all is vanity. All is vanity. And that's where he begins. Now, in verse 10, he says, well, okay, all that was repetitive and there's nothing new. But in verse 10, he starts thinking about, no, is there anything else that's new? Again, he's using his wisdom. He's writing to us. Is there anything new under the sun? He just said a few verses before that there's nothing new under the sun. But is there something new? And so what he does, he thinks about in verse 10. Is there anything of which one might say, see this, it is new. Already it has existed for ages, which were before us. And when he's talking about this, you know, is there anything new? You know, we talk about maybe in the classes, especially the Old Testament, you know, what's the cycle of salvation? Sin, suffering, okay, supplication, and salvation. Well, is there anything new? Is that okay for all time? Yes. Yeah, that's a good system, okay? Is that new? Not new in the sense that it is a way to God. But for us to know it, okay, it is a good system to learn. And some variations on that. Is there anything new about idols today? You know, we see in the Old Testament, I mean, idols, idols, idols. God did not like idols. Okay? False gods. Is that new? It's always here, isn't it? Okay? So in some respect, we do have things repeat themselves. Whether it's statues, okay? Most of the world relies on, okay, idols of some way or another. Of course, the fields are ripe out there for those of Christ. In verse 11, there is no remembrance of earlier things and also of latter things which will occur. He's reflecting here on the idea that let me give an example. Let's say you existed during the Civil War. 4 years. Famine, destruction everywhere. Okay? Family's death. Well, do you reflect on that now? Do you? Do you reflect in World War II or I? Do you reflect on those now? Or is it fading? See? 9/11. The 2009 stock market crash. Okay? Even to a degree, COVID. You know? Now imagine if you were in some northern states, I mean, that persisted a long time up there. So does our memories get short? Okay? As far as wisdom gained from those instances. So that's because it even happens today for us, doesn't it? Okay, so let's remember that as he made that statement here. Among those who will later still, okay, again, the reflection is not there. because again, this is under the sun. But it also has some application to us too, okay? Because he's reflecting with wisdom that we do forget. Because those instances, those occurrences in our life, whether they're illness, okay, or accident, or death, yeah, those things, remember those, reflect on those, because they give us the ability to, live a life, okay, that implores and invites wisdom. Now, and at the end of this section here, before verse 12, the preacher's questions are what? Why do you learn or work for change? What have you gained, achieved, or profited? Man has no positive answers. All is vanity. That's right, isn't it? Okay? Yes, we can reflect, but where's the positive in it? Okay? And that's an interesting point. What he's saying here is that, like my sister, positive is what we want to do. It's interesting, we were looking at the blood transfusion at the beginning of the cycle when they thought she may have leukemia. That I was looking with the bags of whole blood they were giving her, and it was B positive. And I was thinking, maybe that's BE positive. Be positive in life. Okay? And from the time she went in to the time she went out, she was positive. Okay? Of course, questions are answered. Okay? That's always good. But it's nice to know the future. And can you know your future today? I'll skip a little bit. Can you know your future as far as eternity? Those are things you have to work on day by day. Oh, that's an interesting point. Now, in verse 12, there's a transition. And it's a new thought, the preacher says in his first chapter. And he says, the preacher, having been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and he's going to talk about here wisdom and folly. Wisdom and folly. And folly is not a word we use these days much, but we'll do some definition of that in a moment. And he comes back to the idea of, and that's a proof also that it is Solomon, okay, king in Jerusalem. Now, in verse 13 in this section here, and I set my mind to seek and explore my wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. You'll see in this also section a lot of eyes, I. And that's personal to him. And he's trying to, again, impart wisdom, okay? His wisdom to those who would read this in that time and really to the end of time. And he says, and I set my mind, inclined his heart, he's wholly dedicated himself. That's what that means. Seek to explore. Seek and explore is leave no stone unturned, I guess you could say. Okay? No area unexplored. And again, as we go through this book, you'll see that he really leaves no areas unexplored in seeking the answer, which is the first few verses of chapter 1. And that man is afflicted with. Man is compelled to search out things, isn't he? We're curious people, hopefully. We want to do what's best. Maybe for ourselves at that moment, and hopefully we're thinking of others. So he wants you to search that out. And again, as a king, he's going to try to answer those questions. He's doing this with a mind he possesses. Now, in verse 14, here's his answer. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity, striving after wind. He's experienced. He's reflecting back on his life. From the beginning, when he was a young guy, Okay, 15, 20 years old, became king. He asked God for wisdom instead of riches, okay, and prestige. But God gave him what he wanted, wisdom, in his priority. But again, ended up, God also granted him prestige, power, and wealth. And he's seen all that. He's experienced it, all these works as king, which has been done under the sun. And behold, all is vanity, striving after wind. Again, the perspective of the book, driving after wind. Vanity sometimes is called a vapor also. You know, in the wintertime, which we're approaching, you know, you may blow some moisture out of your mouth, okay, in the wintertime, and it dissipates, doesn't it, really quickly. That's another interesting aspect and definition of vanity. It's just gone in an instant. And again, life on earth. Striving after the wind, chasing the wind, are all sort of things that he's making a point of here. In verse 15, what is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. Some of that wording may be a little strange to us. But what is crooked? What does he see that's crooked? The fleeting time we have, the fleeting life we have, this transitory life from one point to another, again, birth to death, all fleeting. And it cannot be straightened. And he's kind of come to some conclusions here that, you know, this life, even though the vanity of life, we, you know, all the effort I make is hopeless. I can't straighten it. There's no remedy. There's no fix. Well, this is sad stuff, huh? But that's what he's saying at this point. I can't fix it. Although my great wisdom, my great power, my great wealth, my great experiences, I can't fix it. Can't fix it with everything I possess. Everything's God given me. And what is lacking cannot be counted. That's interesting there if you look at other versions. It says what is missing cannot be counted. Something's not there. How can you count it? It's really a hopeless thought. And again, there's no remedy and no fix. You cannot count things that are not there. And that's what Solomon's saying in these verses here in verse 15. In 16, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who are in Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. He's stating what he's always said. Okay, I've got it all. I've got the power. I've got the wealth. I've got the prestige, and I've got the wisdom too. And you know what? I can't fix it. I can't answer the question. And magnified, increased wisdom has exceeded everyone. And he's, you know, he's, yes, sir. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
In verse 13, when it says, it is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. And that is a little, you know, note there. Is another word that can be put for grievous is evil.
It's, let me deal with that. In verse 13, it's interesting that now he's kind of talking to God, okay? It's a grievous task. That's a heavy burden. It's a heavy burden which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I'm so frustrated that I can't answer the question. You know, is God punishing me? Is it making it impossible for me? Is it hard? I mean, I should be able to answer the question. About is all life, all my works useless? And that's, I think that's what he's reflecting there. Okay? Again, it's a grievous task, a heavy burden which God has given to the sons of men, including himself in that. I want to answer it, but somehow God's holding me back, or there's it's hard and impossible. Maybe I haven't achieved what I should achieve. Okay? I think that's what it is. Yes, sir.
This is kind of like a Bible study question, but when you have that superscript there, you know, to know evil, that evil is a thought that is associated with grievous there, right? Could the word evil have been used instead of grievous instead in keeping with
Well, in his mind, if you want to say evil has another word interpretation, in his mind, it's evil of God. Okay? It's grievous.
It seems like there are, evil doesn't always mean it's sinful.
That's right.
You know, devil, demonic idea.
That's right.
That's a hard time. It's troubling. It's not necessarily a sinful, cruel thing to do.
Yep. Yes, go ahead, Linda. Yes. If you recognize the Creator, who created all this, not to mention His earth, but the sun, the universe, those stars millions of light years away, all that was done. If you imagine the immenseness of that, and then here we are just sitting right here in our pew. He created us also. Can we approach that? We cannot approach it. And it humbles us, doesn't it? It should humble us. It should humble us also that Christ, as promised, came back to the earth and went through those things, okay, horrendous things, including death. Not to mention ridicule of your own Jewish people. But He did that for each of us. For all time. From Adam through the end of time. So that should humble us also, that sacrifice. And again, predicting that and holding the events from the beginning of time up until that moment. Okay? And again, we can access that God directly in prayer now. No priest needed. No intermediary. But that should humble us also, I think. Okay? Any thoughts? Yes, sir.
I want to comment on Josh's point. The book of Ecclesiastes, sometimes the word evil is not like unrighteousness.
Mm-hmm.
There was a translator put grievous. If you look at chapter 2, verse 21, it uses the word evil there. About wisdom, standing, and great evil. Be aware that the word evil in Ecclesiastes means
yeah. Again, that evil is in his perspective. Okay? We'll get to that. So this is this man of wisdom, this man of God-granted wisdom, who is talking to us now. Again, talking to people all throughout time. Now, in verse 16, I said to myself, "Behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were in Jerusalem before me. My mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge." Is he patting himself on the back? I don't think so. I think he's just acknowledging that I've exceeded everyone. God granted me this insight, this wisdom, okay, to put down these things and trying to understand, okay? And he says he's seen everything. He's observed everything. He's got an understanding, but he keeps saying, I'm most able to make judgments more than anyone else, but I've got this wisdom, and I said to myself, I can't answer this question. Okay? I'm trying to. That's why I'm writing to you. In verse 17, again, and I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind. You know, again, he set his mind, he set his heart to it, some translations. And it's really the good effort, okay? Can you imagine the good effort he's putting on this? Again, he doesn't have to work, you know, a 10-hour job every day. He's putting the thought and the experience he's had and the association he's had to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. This madness and folly is interesting. It takes a lot of different connotation, I guess you'd say. But he's doing a great contrast here between wisdom and folly. And you say madness and folly, you say mad folly. It's a control of your body that's irrational. People do irrational things, and they call it folly. So he's compared the wisdom and the steadiness of folly and the direction that wisdom can give you with the non-direction, the chaos, okay, that mad folly can give. So he's really relating these both, and he says, and this also is driving after wind, chasing the wind. Sometimes that mad folly has the idea of vice with it and wickedness. But the point is, he's got the two extremes here. Calm direction in one's life, okay, to answer the question, and then the absolute absence of guidance in one's life. The two extremes. And he's experienced these. He's seen it. Now, I got a little point here to maybe explain that a little more. When he says in 18, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Oh man, he wants to know through wisdom. But he gets grief, he just can't do it. And the increasing knowledge results in more pain, mental anguish. He's striving so hard to answer the question. And he's doing answering that question for himself. And we'll see in some other place, he's trying to answer that for you and I. Excuse me, the people at that time. Okay? And you and I today too. He wants to answer the question. He's got all the facilities of his mind and body and the power that he has. He just can't answer the question. Mental anguish. Okay? And again, what advantage or profit is there living under the sun? Again, this is perspective of living the physical life without that afterlife. And do a lot of people live that way today? Yeah, this is it, isn't it? Okay? Or at least they act like it. And whether they hurt themselves and hurt others, okay? Cheat others. Not honest. So it's one of those things. Now, in these last, I just want to read a few comments here. Solomon tries all things. We know he's tried all things and found them vanity. He found his searches after knowledge to be weariness. He just can't answer it, much as he tries, not only in the flesh, but to his mind. The more he saw of the works done in this physical life under the sun, the more he saw living to be utter vanity, bankrupt and useless. And the futility of life irritated him more and more. He could neither gain a good satisfaction to handle life to himself nor to others, which he expected but was unable to answer the question. What advantage, profit, does man have in all his work under the sun? What profit? Okay. Even the result of knowledge and wisdom discovered man's wickedness and misery, so that the more he knew, the more he was saddened. That's where he's at this time. Okay, reflection on that verse. Yes, ma'am.
I don't want to back up.
No, that's fine. The more frustrated he gets, okay, that he doesn't that people don't respond to it, that they don't. Again, this is under the sun, all under the sun here. Okay, the physical life, and what is life? What is life? Okay, it repeats itself. There's no conclusion. Whatever you do is given to the next generation. See. No remembrance. He's really lamenting quite a bit, okay? And again, he's setting the stage, okay, for later verses. Yes, sir.
He asks the question in verse 10, see this, it is new, already as it has existed before. Well, we were talking about technology. Space travel didn't exist back then. Artificial intelligence didn't exist back then. Those technologies, though, they still don't change the parameters of how existence happens. And that's what I think verse 15 is about. The crooked cannot be straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. We don't get to change the parameters that God has established from when he made all things. And that means we are finite. Our mind cannot be omniscient. We have these parameters that no matter how much wisdom or technology you have, we're still mortal.
And that all reflects on an idea of choice. In this life, whether back then or now or after AI comes into existence or whatever it is, we can still choose. Now, there may be a lot of muck to get through before you get there, okay? And a lot of hard choices. But this generation that has the given the internet, okay, for lack of another word, okay, there's so much out there to pollute the mind, to destruct us, to divert us away from things that are eternal. And it really directs us to a lot of things that are of this earth. And we end up striving after wind. I mean, when you see that people have been on the internet for kids have been on the internet to teenagers for 6 hours a day, striving after the wind. Sure, they're filling their mind with images and words, rehearsed images. But what good is that in the end? Okay? It'll shape us. It'll shape us. Okay? As did wars, okay, and famine. And who knows what's going to come in the future. You know, I've mentioned to Steve, you know, you could, when you get these 3D images really gone, we could just take Steve's old sermons, you know, and his image. Great teaching, still truths, but who knows what the future holds. I don't like that, okay, at all, because you still lose the human touch to that, okay, and the interaction. Any comment on that?
New does not mean there's no new thing. There are What you gonna do with it? You don't know, and you can't control it. It's evil. Not morally evil. It doesn't answer the question. You're dead and gone. You don't control it. You don't own it. You don't enjoy it. It doesn't.
Exactly right. And also, when you're dead and gone, the striving that you did to put all that together is not appreciated, okay, or recognized. And so that's what happened. Okay, to Solomon. So he deals with his present and the future on this. Gloomy, yes. Teachable, yes. Things that we can put into our lives, okay? And realize where we stand, okay, in our lives at this moment. Of course, we have the hope that is spelled with a capital H, okay? That's a true hope, okay, and been revealed through a scripture. And is verifiable. Okay? Good points. Good points. Now, in verse 17, back to mad folly. Okay? He's against driving out the wind. Verse 18, I read that. So that puts us then, any questions? And we'll move on to let me see if I've answered all the questions. In chapter 1, okay. All right, chapter 2. This is an interesting, he's going into those things that are, what can I say, they could have moral implications. Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. Some people base their whole life on pleasure. So be sure to read these verses. We'll move a little faster, okay, in chapter 2. But there's a lot of things that he puts here that he's done, that he wants to stimulate his mind. And life is more than just what's in your mind, because you have works done under the sun and works that we do today. So appreciate your time, and we'll begin moving a little faster. Okay, thank you very much.